Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and boys and girls, and children of all ages. Hope you guys are all doing well in whatever it is that you're doing. I hope you guys can hear me well. All right, so we're here for FRL headquarters. Originally, we had planned on having a special guest tonight to talk to us about TikTok and so forth, but unfortunately, due to family obligations, he had to sadly postpone his time coming here, which is fine. It happens. We're human. However, it has been a little bit, so I thought I would come here together. I would come here anyway and have a little Saturday night session here at the headquarters. And I thought I'd do a couple things. I'm going to do, you know, we're going to have a little bit of a smorgasbord of things. I have some film reviews, a TV review, as well as to fill you guys in and tell you guys about my weekend last weekend, which I have not talked about yet, as I have successfully gotten down and have returned from Monster Mania down in Hunt Valley, Maryland, my first time going down there to be a part of that event. Although I've been to Monster Mania multiple times, it was my first time going to the Hunt Valley location. And I'm very happy to say I'll be coming back again for the November show as well, which is in Oak, Pennsylvania. So our friends in Oaks, Pennsylvania, I hope to see you guys there. And the other thing I'm going to be doing is doing a little bit of a watch-along right now, as I have not watched wrestling in a long time. I'm told a lot of good things have been happening lately in wrestling. So what I thought I would do is, as I'm going to be giving you guys some film reviews, and some TV reviews and fill you guys in on Monster Mania, what I also figured I'd do is discuss the WWE Extreme Rules, which is going on right now. And it's currently taking place in Philadelphia, which is interesting for two reasons. They call it Extreme Rules, which is funny because old school ECW, my first job in pro wrestling, actually was located in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, which is not, you know, right there, not too far away. Which is why it's interesting that this is taking place here. That a nice, I can tell you, I enjoyed the opening package with Paul Heyman introducing. I don't understand the purpose of the spelling bee. I thought that was kind of a waste of time, if I'm being honest. I don't think that fits in with the whole extreme feel to host a spelling bee out of nowhere, as they had a young man to, you know, trying to do a spelling bee and trying to spell extreme. He looked to be about 13 years old, and I don't know many people who can't spell extreme, really. But anywho. But this card tonight isn't very stacked. It seems to be like there's six matches, and I don't know necessarily if we're going to get to watch all of tonight's events as I'm talking to you, but you know, I'll chime in with a few things if I see of anything of importance as I'm doing multiple things, which is a gift I've learned over the years to be able to do multiple things at once. This is rated PG-13 because I don't exactly know what thoughts I might have. And I have not watched wrestling in a long time again. I wanted to point out that the reason why I haven't watched wrestling in a while. As you guys know, I've been in the pro wrestling business for 21 years now. And I have a lot of friends in the company, in various different companies in wrestling. And for me personally, with the storylines I was seeing and the way they were used and just the embarrassment, and I can't do that to my friends. I don't want to see them being hurt or made fools of. But I am, as you guys know, I'm currently getting ready to go back to getting the call back. So I'm going to be taking part in this eventually or sooner than later, I actually have to see what I'm actually working with first. I can tell you that I did submit some ideas off the top of my head. I don't know if we'll find out if they go through with these tonight or not. I haven't been watching. I do know there's a lot of speculation with the White Rabbit. And I may or may not know things about that. I might. You never know. I'm not going to disclose that right now. And I also have to say, I don't necessarily think you, if you think you're going to see whoever it is tonight, just be patient, I guess. Anywho, let's talk three things at a time. Let's talk Monster Mania 51 that I just came from in Hunt Valley, Maryland. I took the train down. Unfortunately, the people I was supposed to, supposed to go working with, who was a friend of mine, had decided not to volunteer, for family things and some change of heart or whatever. Listen, here's the deal. I am very loyal to a fault. I am there and I'm dependable. If people count on me to be somewhere, I'm going to be there. If I say I'm going to do something, I'm going to do it. In August, if you guys remember, I was supposed to go down to Cherry Hill for the Monster Mania that was there. Unfortunately, I couldn't go due to the fact that I had just moved into our new place here. But since everything was all set, I decided it was probably a good idea for me to do the opposite. I couldn't go down to work that weekend, so I came down for Hunt Valley, Maryland, which was my first time going to that event. Now, leading up to this show, I've always heard over the years from my other friends at Monster Mania that the Hunt Valley show is a quieter show, a more precise show, a more relaxed show. Just before I continue this, I want to say that Ronda Rousey, UFC Hall of Famer and WWE superstar currently, is about to challenge for the Women's SmackDown Championship in an Extreme Rules match. And she is coming in a pink gi. Of course, pink is breast cancer awareness, is cancer and breast cancer awareness, for those people who may not know. Which is why it's pink. But of course, people might not also know that Ronda Rousey was actually on the Olympics judo's team way back in the day. So, yes, that is a thing. And so, there you go. Just want to say that was a class act by Rousey coming out in the pink gi, showing, some support for the cancer research and whatnot, and also throwback to her judo days. So, good for her. This match, I am not over. She's facing someone named Liv Morgan, who is small in stature. She's booked as an underdog, but she somehow keeps on squeaking by. She's more known for her cosplaying as a wrestler during the matches. Like right now, she's putting out like a twisted version of Harley Quinn. Anyway, Liv Morgan, a blonde girl, has some makeup. One part used to be part of a faction called the Riot Squad. She is now the Women's SmackDown Champion, and she has been so for a while. Now, this is an Extreme Rules match, so I don't see any reason why it should be any different than any other Extreme Rules match, which means there are no rules. Rousey, a UFC Hall of Famer and a legit fighter. I'm pretty confident Ronda Rousey could probably beat half the men on the roster up, let alone this little girl here. Again, Olympic gold medalist and former UFC women's champion. She is the reason why Dana White pretty much changed his mind on women fighting in the UFC. That is the dominance and the respect that Ronda Rousey commands. Historically speaking, for those people who don't know, Ronda Rousey has a longtime friendship with fellow UFC star Shayna Baszler, as well as Maria Shafir and there's another one there too. For some reason, her name is forgetting my mind, but there was four of them. And they call themselves the Four Horsewomen of the UFC, in honor of Ric Flair, who is the leader of the stable group in wrestling, the historic Four Horsemen. What's funny about that is that, you know, one of those Kevin Bacon moments is that in the developmental part of the WWE, Ric Flair's daughter, Charlotte, was known as part of the group known as the Four Horsewomen of the NXT, which is, again, their developmental group. All right, so this girl is kind of roll around on her feet, and Ronda Rousey just kneed her in the face, kneed her in the gut, and now she's locking her in some type of submission hold. I think she should just hold it until she taps. End this early. I don't know. This is strange to me. I don't get this. This is terrible. This is just terrible. Anyway. Now she's got a baseball bat, the little blonde girl. Ronda Rousey does not need the baseball bat. Just saying. All right. Anywho. Get back to the Boston Mania. So I left via train early in the morning. I got there in record time. It was a pretty good trip down there in Hunt Valley, Maryland. Got to experience their version of a commuter rail. And it's interesting how, no matter where you go in the country or in the world, everyone has some type of traveling, you know, some type of thing. I've been talking to some friends of mine in Russia, for example, and they have a subway system as well that is similar with commuter rails and trains and buses. This is a thing all over the United States and most places in the world have some type of public or government transportation. And it's interesting how everyone is able to adapt to those, and so many people rely on those types of things. Oddly enough, that is kind of the focus of my stage play, oddly enough, which I don't talk a lot about because we're still developing the places and so forth for the stage play. And I'm very excited once we start doing auditions for the casting and so forth. And it does, I can tell you that it does, you know, for the most part, it does feature around a train station. It's about the people who commute every day on these trains and the lives that are, you know, kind of cross over every day. Ronda Rousey is walking around with the baseball bat the little blonde girl came in with. And it's just saying she doesn't need the baseball bat. She doesn't. And the girl just sprayed it with a fire extinguisher. Second match, by the way. This is already terrible. And now she's going to hit it with a Russian leg sweep. Nope, never mind. Ronda Rousey threw her like a sack of potatoes with a judo throw. It was a nice try, though. Anyway, back to Monster Mania. So I took the train down, got down to Baltimore, Maryland, the train station there, and then I had to take what they call the commuter rail, what I would consider a trolley where I'm from, which is an above-ground cable car. And I took that to where I needed to be in Hunt Valley, which is right near the hotel, which is about a minute away from the train station, which is kind of convenient. I got to the hotel, and you know, what started out as a little nervous, if I'm being honest, because originally the person I was supposed to go down with, you know, we were supposed to share the room, and I wasn't sure how that was going to work when I got down there, if I could, you know, swing things or what was going to happen. But fortunately, a big shout out to my friends, Daryl and Alex, separately. But Daryl was nice enough. He heard, you know, we became friends when I started work coming to Monster Mania. And so Alex is also an individual who I've known throughout all of these events I've seen him at. And this young man, Alex, I've actually literally watched grow. And he's also a fellow Massachusetts guy from my hometown of Boston. Nice young man. I know his dad also. Jeff is a good guy. And they're both in the acting world. I'm hoping to bring them on board when I start filming. But Alex, you know, stepped up on Sunday when I still couldn't leave yet because my train wasn't leaving until Monday. For those people who don't know, primarily when I go down, you know, to any event, Monster Mania, whatever, I usually go down the day before and I leave the day after. For traveling-wise purposes, it's actually a lot smoother, and it was. The event itself, you know, I was working. I had the luxury of work with some great individuals, fellow staff members, fellow, you know, they were fantastic people to work with, Jen and the Hagans. It was great to see all those guys and Brian. Now, I've got to talk about Brian right quick. I finally learned his name after all these years, after all these times. Brian is an individual who I've seen multiple times, and he's at all these shows. And I worked with him even last March when I first, you know, crossed over into that realm, into the officially part of the working staff. And you talk about a guy who has a lot of patience and someone who is a literally good-natured individual. Primarily speaking, I'm good with faces. I know who people are by face. Names sometimes I get mixed up if I've only, you know, used them a couple times. And to be fair, I currently only use a lot of pet names anyway when I talk to people, you know, Slick, Jude, Chief, my friend, whatever. I don't really use names per se as often as most people. But, you know, he was a good sport. I called him one name, and then I was talking about him to my friend Daryl, who was nice enough to help me out on Thursday, and he, no, luckily I was able to, you know, pony my money together with him, and, you know, I was able to share a room with him and his family. It was a really good time, and really nice people. A good thank you to Daryl for helping out right that when my friend kind of dropped the ball on that, so I appreciated that. And then Alex on Sunday didn't want to see me nowhere, so he invited me in there, so thank you to him as well. So first of few thanks. But the hotels are all set now, and everything's all good. And I had the luxury of working with some greats of Hollywood and horror and various other places. I got to work with the great Clint Howard, who is that guy who's almost in everything you could probably think of. You just don't know, might not know his name. Clint Howard, I have actually even come to learn even more about. Clint Howard famously is the younger brother of actor, filmmaker, director, and former child star Ron Howard. And I think most people, depending on what your age is, I know you've seen something with him in it. Perhaps you remember him from his role in The Waterboy as one of the wild fans. Or maybe you remember him from The Grinch, Dr. Seuss's The Grinch, which is also directed by his brother, Ron. And, of course, that was the one that was starring Jim Carrey. And, of course, Clint Howard would play Cindy Lou Who's father in The Grinch. Clint Howard also was in a movie called The Ice Cream Man, which is a very low-budget cult classic horror film, which is exactly what it sounds like. But, you know, this, his roles and his resume just leaks everywhere. I was shocked to realize and really take into account, like, how long he's worked in the industry. He was the voice of the young elephant in the Jungle Book, the old school Disney Jungle Book movie. He was also Roo in the original Winnie the Pooh. So there's something to be said there. That's kind of impressive. When you look back at that career, and he's all over the place. He's done that. He's done Apollo 11. He's done, like I said, The Grinch. He's done things with Adam Sandler, several things with Adam Sandler, you know, plus other little things are on the way. And pretty certain pretty much anything that his brother makes, he's pretty much in it automatically, which is to say also. But Clint was a really nice guy. I got to say, I got to know his agent and his wife, and they were very nice individuals. It was a blessing to get to meet these people. They were fantastic to work with all weekend, very pleasant people, very down-to-earth. Clint's full of knowledge. His manager, one of the nicest and one of the most personable managers I've seen. And you don't see that a lot with these guys. You know, they come around and they disappear. This guy was right front forward. They worked as a great team. And I have to commend them on that. They did a great job that weekend, you know, just getting to know them. He was from North Carolina. He had that southern drawl. Very nice guy. And, you know, again, his wife was fantastic. Also got to work with the great Roger Jackson from Scream. But I have to tell you guys a funny story real quick. I'm going to talk about TV quick, too, because I think there's a TV show you guys really, really should hear about if you haven't heard about it yet. It's a show that is not around right now, but this is kind of one of those things. Some, you know, we in the industry, we in the, you know, various things, we always, you know, we'll hear a name of someone or we'll see someone or something, but we'll, it'll, you know, cross our mind. We won't think about it, right? And whatnot. But, you know, you'll see someone and you'll be like, oh, I know that, you know, I know of that thing, or I know of some, you know, something will call to mind something else. You know, when you see an actor or something, like, I know that guy from something, but I don't know what. Or, you know, they're advertised for something else, and but you might know them for something. For example, Christopher Sarandon, who is also in the at the event and not too far away from me. Christopher Sarandon, who was, you know, famously did the voice for Jack Skellington in The Nightmare Before Christmas. He also was the prince in The Princess Bride. He was trying to marry, you know, Wesley's love. And he was in, and he was also in Child's Play. He was the detective. But, like, then we got William Ragsdale. Now, what's funny is William Ragsdale and Christopher Sarandon worked together on a movie called Fright Night from back in the 1980s. William Ragsdale, I worked with him in the same room, talked to him, very pleasant guy, very nice, very down to earth, was chatting with him. You know, we talked about wrestling a little bit. As he knows, I did wrestling. And Clint Howard, by the way, found out Ron and Clint Howard are also fans of wrestling, so... It's always good to have a common ground there. But William Ragsdale, I come to find out, was on one of my favorite childhood TV shows. And it was one of those TV shows that, again, was before. I probably shouldn't have been watching it. And if I did get to watch it, I was doing really good because on late, really late at night on Fox, he was on a show called Herman's Head. And basically the premise of Herman's Head, it's kind of like that that DreamWorks or that Disney movie where the all of the girls' emotions live inside her. Well, that was a TV show in Fox, rightfully so. Wow. Anyway, by the way, Ronda Rousey just won via submission, I believe, by choking out the champion and some other type of thing using a table leg that was wrapped around the girl's neck. Very barbaric, but it was exactly how I expected it to go. Ronda Rousey won via submission. Good for her. Anyway, back to Herman's Head. Herman's Head was William Ragsdale played Herman, who is the guy. Now, what you don't know is inside Herman's head, he has all of his emotions, his lust, his romance, his intellect, his, you know, his fun side, and like his, you know, athletic side of him. So basically the movie Inside Out that DreamWorks made or Disney did or whatever it was, that was basically the kids' version of Herman's Head, but Herman's Head preceded it in the 80s. And it, you know, it was actually where Lisa Simpson, the actress who did the voice for Lisa Simpson, got her start. As one of the, I think she played the love part of it. So really cool show. And I got to talk to him about that, and I had no idea until, you know, later on Saturday that he was Herman. So that was really cool to talk to her and stuff. It was really enjoyable, and it was fun. So that was really cool. And then, you know, everyone else was very nice as well. I got to say hi to James Jude Courtney, who is Michael Myers. I got to say hi to talked to a lot of the other guys, Philip Bostonian, Anthony Michael Hall, who's always a hot ticket. Malcolm McDowell, another pleasant individual, longtime actor, long legend in the business. He's been pretty much in everything. You talked about a person who's, you know, met people and does the name drop thing. Talked about making films with Laurence Olivier, who is an Academy Award winner for things like Ben-Hur and Lawrence and, you know, all Prince of Egypt and all kinds of things. Ben-Hur and all of these amazing films. And, you know, there's Malcolm McDowell who crosses the lines with all these people. Amazing. Talked about his old friends he used to hang around with, Laurence Olivier and Helen Mirren, both. And she's a dame, Helen Mirren, by the way. I should mention that. So these are people with some pedigree to the name. And Malcolm McDowell is in there, and he talks like, you know, just going out of style. He's a really, really cool individual to talk to and also very knowledgeable. I actually was able to talk to him about the show that I was able to stream that I talked about before called Son of a Critch, which was a great show out of New Finland. I do hope it does come here to the States. It is a really good show. It's got two seasons in it. Malcolm McDowell plays the grandfather of the young protagonist. This is kind of like Wonder Years style, but it's, you know, set in New Finland. So a different kind of a landscape and a different culture. So it's kind of cool. Set in the 80s, which is also really cool. So should be fun. But, you know, it was good talking to him about that and, you know, various things. And picking their brains. These guys are around the business a long time in filmmaking and so forth. It's always nice to, you know, really chat with those guys who, you know, are really the reason that inspired me to get into filmmaking at various stages and very open. And I think it's always, it's never a bad thing to ask other people in the industry for suggestions on how to make yourself even better. Even if we know as much as we think we do, even if we are comfortable with ourselves, even if we think we know all kinds of things, we think that we're, you know, the best. It doesn't mean that you can't be open to critiquing. Doesn't mean that you're open to what I call constructive criticism. I think people grow from that honesty. That's just why I'm brutally honest with everyone when it comes to hardworking and dedication and so forth. Why I reward the people whom I work with on the shows and so forth. So there's that. Now that was that was that weekend, and it was a great weekend down there in Hunt Valley. I got to say, the hotel was a little chaotic, a little confusing, the hotel. The layout was very – so there's three floors to this hotel, and it's three floors, but it's all like – you know, almost like they added wings on top of the floored hotel. And it's very bizarre shaped. So, like, if you go in the side door, if you miss one door, you go into a side door, you're in a completely different building, and you'll get lost. It doesn't. It's kind of like being stuck in, like, some type of labyrinth, kind of. Very different. Kind of had a lodge feeling to it. Had a very rustic feeling. Almost, like certain elements of it, it was almost like going down the Batcave, so to speak. In fact, some areas are exactly like the Batcave. At Hunt Valley. But, it's cool stuff. And, it was my first time going down to that event, and it was good to be there for that. And I look forward to Oak, Pennsylvania. And obviously, as you can hear, I did get home okay. I did have to wait until 11 p.m. on Monday night to come home. Because that was the time a train was. And that means I didn't get home till a little bit after 6 or 7 o'clock on Tuesday morning for those people who are keeping track. But I did sleep on the train a little bit. I did some reading. I did some writing as always. I always stay active. It's also a good time to meditate and whatnot. So always be prepared for those long rides and so forth. And I got home okay. I got to talk to some friends. I got to say hi to the Hagans. Didn't get my selfies with the Hagans, as I like to get my pictures with them because they're always good guys, and I always like to honor my time with them because I honestly believe in whenever you have the opportunity to get around with people you get along with, you have to embrace those times because the time's going to come you won't have those. It's a sad truth, but it'll get better. So there's that. So, yeah. by the way, the package that's going on WWE Extreme Rules right now is Karrion Kross and Drew McIntyre are going to have a strap match. The rules of the strap match are pretty simple and self-explanatory. At least it should be, if it is the strap I believe it should be anyway. Okay, so they're going by pinfall or submission with this, with the original idea of a strap match or a bull rope match. You know, each of the strap will be attached to one individual's hands. So they'll have one big giant, like, strap, leather, you know, what a belt or whatever, and both guys will be jointed by the wrist. And the old way of doing it was one person would have to touch each corner of the ring, similar to the bull rope match, to, you know, before winning. Right here, we're going to do the thing where we're going to have the strap, apparently, but they're still going to do pinfall or submissions, which is strange. These are two big guys and ultimately are two very, if Jim Ross, the legendary Jim Ross, is he probably said it was a slobber. I'm very happy I'm doing this podcast. I have my headphones listening to you guys because I absolutely am not on board with this commentary team tonight or anything else. I honestly do not like Michael Cole. I don't like Corey Graves on commentary. And unfortunately, folks, that is not something that is in my realm of changing. That's out of my pay grade. Even if I was to work there, or when I do work there, whatever the case may be, I won't have any say in, you know, things of that nature because that's out of my jurisdiction. I think that whatever your job is in any kind of environment, you need to know what your role is. And being creative and being on character development is a huge job in itself, and that's going to take up a lot of my time as it is. I'm not going to have time to sit there and babysit the commentators. Although I do think it's a smart move to have Wade Barrett and the new guy, the new Irish guy, apparently, because I heard him in the countdown thing my wife showed me. You know, the Irish in me kind of speaks to that. So Karrion Kross, on the circuit, is known as Killer Kross. He was released for a little while, and apparently Triple H, when Vince McMahon, for those people who have lived under a rock and don't know, Vince is no longer within the company, and he's no longer here. So Karrion Kross is, in fact, going to be able to, you know, be off the leash, so to speak, as himself and whatnot. He was released, as I said. They brought him up to the main roster from the developmental program, which he dominated. And they gave him, like, this low-grade, kind of like a low-graded, I want to say a cheap version of Demolition. He had, like, the straps and the, you know, dominatrix-type settings. It was not a very appealing look. I didn't get to watch it then because I had already given up at that point, but that's not something you would do to someone like Karrion Kross. Karrion Kross, you know, is where he is right now and the reason why he is where he is. And I also want to take a moment to mention Karrion Kross, Braun Strowman, these guys who are supposed to be part of something called the Create Your Own Narrative Wrestling Alliance, which is supposed to be this new company that was supposed to start with, supposed to be legit, you know, fighting, legit wrestling. And then it kept on changing how they were going to do it. So hints to say, Triple H came into power, and being a fan of both Kross and Braun and some other people, me, he's bringing back the kids back together, so to speak. And Triple H's return, and or his rise to where he is, Kross is here. Scarlett is with him, which is his valet in NXT. She was missing in action, so to speak, for the other. So, yeah, they are attaching the strap to each other right now. Drew McIntyre is putting his side on. Cross will now probably play around with it and probably not do so. So Cross is going to be difficult by throwing around the strap because he doesn't think he needs it. Now he's just going to put it on because, you know, he has to. He's just delaying it. So they are. So he's doing slow tease again. All right, so that's how that's going to work. So using the strap as a distraction tool, the strap was pulled by the girl outside the ring. It being a strap match means there's no rules, by the way. It is no disqualifications and whatnot. The pinfalls and submissions have to be in the ring, of course. But, of course, there is a strap that is made of leather, supposedly. So, of course, they can use the strap as a weapon itself, which, again, Cross has not attached himself to it. He just drew at this moment, which is stupid because it's really kind of pointless. I mean, the strap match in general in this case is kind of pointless. I don't think the issue was that either guy was running away. And the idea of a strap match was primarily to keep each other in the same area. So the other person, because one of the people would usually have the powder effect where they'd run away, kind of like the idea of a cage match to keep the two guys in and everyone else out. I'm noticing that also that I just noticed on the camera, they have a bunch of people blurted out their shirts. I'm going to wonder if they had AEW shirts on because they were all crossed out, like video distorted because AEW, which is the other company, I'm not watching any of that. I'll listen to my friends who do their own podcasts and hear their reviews. If you want to hear people review their stuff, watch one of those guys. Listen to Jim Cornette. He'll tell you how it is. One of the only honest people out there in wrestling still, who has no problem telling you how it is. And, you know, he gives people props when they deserve it, but he also gives them their lashings when they also deserve it. I don't still see the point of having the strap match. Eventually, I'm sure, you know, while Cross is down, I'm sure Drew's going to, what, put him on the stupid. Anyway, let me get back to my thing here. I'm almost regretting watching this, but maybe, who knows, maybe it'll get better. Wrestling is not like it used to be, folks. Anyway, maybe we can get some help to make it better. But anyway, let's get back to, you know, so WrestleMania was good. I got home, and things have been great. For those people who don't know also, I want to say a quick thank you to everyone for their anniversary wishes. As yesterday, in fact, being the 7th of October, was, in fact, my wife and I's wedding anniversary, where we finally walked the aisle, literally, into the wrestling ring of marriage, literally. And, you know, it's been a few years now, and we're very proud and happy that, you know, our family became a real family. And it was a proud moment. And another significant part of why, you know, I believe that anything in life is possible. So I was correct. Drew McIntyre, by the way, has put the other end of the strap on Karrion Kross, who is now down. So now Drew McIntyre is going to beat Kross up for a little bit. Yeah, ridiculous. Anyway, that's what's going on there. But, yes, thank you to everyone who wished us a happy anniversary. And it was a very quiet evening. Quiet day, and quite frankly, I'm okay with that. If I'm just around my family or the ones I love, that's okay with me. You know, talk to the kids, I talked to my wife, obviously I was with my wife, so that was very nice. Went to the movies, my son helped us get into the movies as he was in the movie theater. So went to the movies to see Barbarian, which was, you know what, I'm just going to give you the review now. I didn't like it. And I also have to say something else here. I love horror movies, as people know. But listen, let's slow it down here a minute here, guys. After the movie, my wife and I, after watching Barbarian with Bill Skarsgård and some other woman, and everyone else is just kind of throw away. I have to say, the only one I really recognized out of anything was Bill Skarsgård. The movie itself, called Barbarian, doesn't have any meaning for the name of the movie. Oh, I forgot. Justin Long is also in the film. How could I forget Justin Long? Justin Long is also in this film. And they're the same Justin Long character that Justin Long plays in horror movies. So if you guys watch Jeepers Creepers or any of his other attempts at horror, then you probably have seen this act before. And has the same result, go figure. No spoilers. And I'm going to try to give you guys this review without giving spoilers, but I'm going to tell you right now, I have to hold my fellow critics out there accountable. I don't know what movie they watched, and I don't know how you give people like original, different, or breathtaking, amazing to describe this film. And it hurts me to say that I don't see what they're talking about. I watched the film. See, when I watch anything, doesn't matter, film or television, I go in with an open mind, but not, unlike a lot of people, I don't just watch a film. I study a film. I study television. How do these things work? What are the dynamics? What is going to happen? Do I believe everything? Do I believe the characters? Do I believe the situation at hand? I've gone over this before, the things that I look for in what is, quote, a good film. Doesn't matter what the film is. It doesn't have to be a blockbuster film. It doesn't have to be a drama. It could be a horror film. Horror can be done well. Horror, comedy, drama, kids' films, they could all be done well if they're done and they have a good formula. This movie, I don't feel, was anything special. I think it was the title was just misleading. I thought it went nowhere. There's no outcome. Someone said, well, there's no way the director doesn't think he's going to write it as a prequel or a sequel. I hope not. But I'm wondering, am I too tough on films if I'm the only one that seems to have a problem with this movie? And I'm apparently the only one that had in the Dahmer TV miniseries on Netflix a not stellar review either. And apparently a lot of other people disagree, and they think that's the greatest thing. I guess, is it that we're just, as a culture, we're just clamoring for something different? Because of the repetitiveness and the same old, same old. Is that what it really is? Because if that's the case, you're right. You know, no one has made a movie that has got the same premise of Barbarian, except that it takes things from three or four different movies and kind of intertwines them all. So, no, it isn't original. Because it does borrow from three different other types of horror films together. So that's not different. That's just, it's kind of like a horror collage, if you would. Right? So it goes to Saw, for example. Saw is known as being what we call torture, horror torture. It's gore, right? Want to see what the, how they're going to gross you out with the best special effects by gore. Horror is supposed to attack your physical, your mental state, your emotions. That's the idea of a horror film. It's not to gross you out or skeeve you out. That's not what that's for. And of course, this film had a lot of the jump scares, and it borrowed from three different other films. And if I was to tell you those three films, you kind of have the idea of the whole movie. There's elements in three, and none of it really fits with this. It wasn't good. It wasn't original. It's been done before. It's to be done better. I honestly think it's just people have not been to a movie in a long time, and they haven't been exposed to something new in so long that they're really desperate for something good. So so that they will easily give something a pass if it's not a remake and not a prequel or a sequel. We can't do that as fellow film critics, though, because that actually hurts our industry. We need to be consistent. We need to be honest. We need to give good constructive criticism. And when people want to hear our reviews, we need to give them reviews that come from us as ourselves. They need to come from a realistic, thing. Now, not everyone has gone to film school. Not everyone knows, the ins and outs of making a film. We in the industry, of course, do. But you don't need to be able to go to the film industry or to describe it to a regular person and tell them, is it good, is it bad, and here's why. And people who I have a lot of respect for in the industry who are fellow critics, I watched some of theirs, and I'm like, what are you guys doing? Why are you talking like that? Some of them, almost like they want to say it's – they keep saying it's different or it's refreshing. It's not refreshing. It's kind of a mingle of three different things. You're right. It's not a remake. It's not a prequel. So it is, in fact, its own film. But the problem is it borrowed from three other films to make it its own film. And it wasn't done good. It didn't have consistency. It was all over the place. It was hard to understand. I found... one of the biggest things for a film to survive is the element of caring about the characters. Do I like these people? Do I care about these characters? In horror, it doesn't matter what the genre is. In an action film, you want to cheer for the hero. Same thing goes for any other type of thing where there's a hero and there's a protagonist. You want to hate the bad guy and you should like the good person. This film, Barbarian, the woman was obnoxious. She was made very poor decisions, put herself in peril for no reason whatsoever. The gentleman, Bill Skarsgård did good because he wanted to throw you off, I guess, to make you think that he was like this creepy guy. And no, it's just a conspiracy, I suppose. But there's no answers why any of this would ever work. Justin Long, who is the owner of this bread and breakfast where Bill Skarsgård and the other actors happen to book at the same time on two different sites, and if anyone's ever done this before, this is not a thing that can happen, and would also be liable, and also just this neighborhood, and just there's too many cliches. This movie wasn't good. I'm sorry. The neighborhood that this bread and breakfast is this beautiful, kind of decently made, kind of upkeep kind of house, nicely painted, nicely furnished, right? And then when you pan back from the neighborhood to the wide angles, the homes are all decrepit. The homes are all falling apart. It looks like a waste of time. This is stupid. So Drew McIntyre's in the ring, about to give Kieran Cross the claymore. Oh, brother. This is stupid. So let me tell you what just happened in wrestling, folks. This is so stupid. So Kieran Cross, the tough guy, right? He's having a fight with Drew McIntyre, who both attached to the strap. The valet, who is with Cross, gets in the ring as McIntyre is about to claymore his head off. Remember, there's no disqualifications. She sprayed him with pepper spray. Remember, no disqualifications. And Cross, when he was blinded, hit him with the elbow to the back of the head for the win. This was the dumbest thing I've ever seen. Now, the reason they probably had to go with this is because, from what I understand, they botched She botched a fireball to the face. And when she sprayed him in the eye, it looks like silly string, for the record. Mace doesn't look like that. Oh, it's terrible. Dumb. So Cross now has his valet on his shoulder. I don't know what the point of any of that was. The strap was stupid. So Scarlett is the name of the valet, by the way, for this guy, Cross. And everyone apparently is making a lot of jokes, a lot of reference to this white rabbit. And a lot of people seem to believe that this is going to be something that's going to be answered tonight as far as this mystery goes. Apparently there's been QR codes and so forth. I may or may not know what's going on there. I'm not going to describe that, but I just want people to know that don't always assume. You know what they say about people who assume, and that's all I'm going to say about that. Yeah, so just in general, just it wasn't a good movie, Barbarian. I wouldn't recommend it. I did, after that, come home and I watched Mr. Harrigan on Netflix, starring Jaden Martell, as well as Donald Sutherland. What a great film. That film was actually good. I thought it was. My wife and I split. But the other problem kind of is, but the other issue with it is the fact that the problem with that was that, you know, because my wife was already not happy with, you know, the Barbarian film, which she picked, by the way, because she wasn't happy with that, that already upset her. You know, she was thinking that this film would be better than that. And ultimately it was. Yeah, it was a little slow, but it was a Stephen King, based on a Stephen King short story, Mr. Harrigan's film. Jaden Martell, who was, you know, really catching up to all the Stephen King tropes and whatnot. It was also good to see New England featured, Boston featured, as always, which is really cool. I've had the luxury of talking and knowing and meeting with Jaden Martell and a lot of those guys when they were filming it and so forth, and after it. So great young men right there. Great, awesome individual. Donald Sutherland. Good God. When you talk about a career that has transcended, and when you talk about a difference of a film, right? Now, a lot of people are going to say, well, you know, Mr. Harrigan's phone's really boring or really dull. But there's a lot of meta in Mr. Harrigan's home, Mr. Harrigan's phone. His phone is based upon, again, the short story by Stephen King. And basically what this features, huh? So basically what this features is, oh boy. So the Philadelphia hockey team's mascot is harassing the Miz, and they feel like this is intriguing for some reason. Anyway, I had to point that out as I was sitting there getting ready to tell you about Mr. Harrigan's phone. But it is a great film. It basically, it's a Donald Sutherland, a very elderly gentleman, hires the young actor who originally played the character who then Jaden Martell would take over playing as an older individual into his college years, in fact, who was a young man who, Donald Sutherland, who was kind of a loner, billionaire, living in the town of Set, and guess where? You guessed it, Maine. I believe it was supposed to be set in, it was in Great Harlow. And for those people who, Harlow, Maine, for those people who don't know, is also the setting of Salem's Lot and so forth. So there's a lot of Stephen Kingisms in Mr. Harrigan's phones. So that's old school Stephen King. Harlow, Maine, where, you know, Salem's Lot takes place and so forth and whatnot. And of course, you know, Donald Sutherland, this billionaire who is a very rich individual, sticks to himself, has a big mansion or whatever, hires a young, you know, the young character who Jaden Martell would play to come and read to him because his eyes were failing, read to him books. And as it comes out, the young man had lost his mother. He's living with his dad. He feels like he's alone. And that's kind of sad to me because, see, I grew up with no dad, but I had a mom. So I often feel that in these films, they make it sound like dads are not a sufficient parent in this situation. And I know that's not what they're trying to imply. Because here's the sad part is, and it is sad when you lose a parent, when you lose a child. It's very tragic, and it's very sad when a kid at a young age has to learn about death at a young age. I get that. I've had my share of it. But I do think that something should be said about the fact that why does it have to always be the world? Why does it always have to be that the fathers in these films, whenever there is a father who is the surviving parents, they are the ones that normally do not get along with their kids or vice versa, and they're the ones who get the brunt of the anger by the teen who is, you know, dealing with the same pain the parent is and whatnot. But in this film is the same kind of idea where Jaden Martell is extremely rebellious. He lost his mother. He's angry. Dad does a great job, in my opinion, at trying to be a dad multiple times. Jaden Martell isn't having any of it in this film. He doesn't even give his dad that time. And frankly, that's a little upsetting to me to see. It also has me worry, as a father's point of view, does that mean that only the mother is actually someone who can be nurturing, someone that the kids can relate to, that the kids can go to whenever they have issues? I don't think that's the way it should be. I think it should be I think that when it comes to raising kids, when you have the two parents, that both parents need to do an equal job bringing the kids up together, and the kids should be able to go to either or have the same respect for that and their parents. And now, tragically, if they were to lose one or the other, then the other one should be one who could step up, and the kid should be just as comfortable with that parent as the other one. But for some reason in these films, this is never a thing. It's always the mom's gone, dad doesn't know anything, dad's mean. His dad does the best he can. His dad gets him a phone when he asks him for a phone. His dad gives him things that he needs. But it's never good enough, and that's kind of sad that it's like that. And I'm not taking away from the fact that it's sad to lose a mom or a dad, but he has a dad still, and the dad does can to try to, you know, be there for his son. He says it over and over again, but yet can't, you know, bring himself to rely on his dad. So he goes to Mr. Harrigan, played by Donald Sutherland, and that confides in him instead. And that's kind of heartbreaking in a way, if I'm being honest. So there's that. And The Undertaker and the WWE, as they're announcing, is coming to my hometown of Boston. So, yeah, I'll see you guys in Boston, by the way, for you guys who are coming to Boston, as I will be. You might not be able to see me per se because I have other things going on, but you'll see me. I'll be there. They're also saying The Undertaker, who has been part of the wrestling world for a long time, probably one of the most innovative forces in wrestling. Out of wrestling know who The Undertaker is. He is a person who commands respect, and he is an individual who is doing a one-man show, so to speak, as he's telling road stories and so forth. So if you guys ever get a chance to listen to The Undertaker, when he comes to town for his one-night show, check him out. Listen to The Undertaker's stories. He's, you know, he was a judge for the Wrestlers Court for a long time, so I'm sure he's got plenty of stories he could tell you. And a long career that transcends way beyond the WWE days. I remember him before he was in the WWE. I always thought he was athletic and different. Way back when I was a little kid growing up, I was amazed by his athleticism. A lot of people don't remember that one of his staple maneuvers that he would do back in the WCW days is Mean Mark. He would walk the top rope without holding the arm of the opponent, mind you. The opponent would be down, and he would walk across the top rope, like tightrope walk across the top rope. Keep in mind, The Undertaker is 6'9", 6'10", depending on what day of the week it is. And he's 328 pounds, tightrope walking across the top rope. Great athleticism there. That's not something easily done. And then he would drop an elbow when he gets to be about the middle of the ring. I was always hoping that one day he would walk across the entire top of the ring, because I'm not so certain he could. They would go punch as a finishing maneuver, which they have outlawed since in wrestling. And then, of course, now when you see the Undertaker do something similar, it's called the old school. He'll grab the guy's arm, he'll go to the rope, he'll walk across the rope with the guy's arm. I'm wondering if that comes to do with all of the injuries that he has sustained over the years, that he might not physically be able to walk across the top rope like he used to balance himself, maybe. But it's still impressive nonetheless. By the way, right now they're going to have a women's ladder match, one-on-one for the women's title. They've claimed this is the first time they've had this. This is a lie. They've had women ladder matches before, because this was done at NXT, which is their company, and they had a Money in the Bank briefcase thing a couple times, which is also a ladder match, people, in case you didn't know. There's seven women involved in that one. So, and also there was a three-way women's title match as well, with having to do with ladders. So to say this is the first time, maybe you could say this is the first time these particular two women have had a ladder match, but they said this is the first ladder match that the women have had here in the WWE, and that is a blatant lie. Just want to point that out. They have, in fact, had a ladder match, which is just stupid to begin with. Anyway, let's turn back to this. So that was I talked to you guys about the Barbarian. I talked about Mr. Halligan's phone. Ultimately, I thought it was really well done. I thought it was kind of nice to see the dynamic that this kid would get to befriend this older man and vice versa. But the other thing is, it also was a social piece about how cell phones and how, you know, technology really impacts relationships. At one point, they refer to the lunchroom segregated by what type of phone someone has. This is apparently set in the 90s when phones were scarce. You had to actually have money in order to have a cell phone. Cell phones were a thing that not everyone could have right away, as they were very expensive. And iPhones, because this is one of the first things with the iPhones, really started, and also the iPhones are heavily endorsed in this film. So that would say that it was early days of the iPhone. And I got to tell you right now, and I'm going to take this stance, I will never own an iPhone because, for one thing, there's way too much going on there, and two, I don't need it. I'm perfectly happy with my Android. Thank you very much. So there's that. So this is a women's ladder match, I remind you, and they use a lot of athletic things back and forth. The idea of a ladder match, for those people who don't know, is you need to climb the ladder that, you know, hangs about 15 feet in the air to retrieve the title or titles that are hanging above the ring, 15 feet above the mat, to which you, why you need the ladder. And the ring, of course, the titles are held in the center of the ring. So, yeah, that is the idea of the ladder. And, of course, all you have to do is climb up the ladder and grab the title. The problem is whoever you're facing is simply not going to allow you just to climb up the ladder to retrieve the title above, because that would end the match and reward the person who climbed the ladder to retrieve the championship or whatever you're trying to claim as the winner. So there you go. Now you have the lesson on what a ladder match is, which is kind of self-explanatory, I feel. Unnecessary, I would say also. This is the third match, and I wanted to tell you how this show so far has been. This is started off with a six-man tag team match, which is basically a Texas Tornado match, which means everybody's in the ring, same time. It's a train wreck, and it's no holds barred. There's items all around the ring, but it's a street fight, basically, and it works as Tornado, which means everyone's in the ring at the same time. Then they had the women's Extreme Rules match with Rousey and Liv Morgan, which is now the second gimmick now. Now, a gimmick in wrestling is whatever the stipulation is, that's the gimmick. So the gimmick is the type of style of the match it's having, right? So the first one you have way too much. This is stupid. Anyway, so the first one, again, they had a Texas Tornado tag team match, six-man, no holds barred match, basically, a street fight. And then they had the women's Extreme Rules match. No rules and everything was legal, whatever. Then they had the strap match, which was Drew McIntyre and Karrion Kross, which I told you guys about. And by the way, Karrion Kross picked up the win, as I explained. Now they're having a women's ladder match. And the other things that are on this card is a I Quit match between Edge. People who grew up in the 90s probably know of Edge because he was around back then. He was during the height of the Attitude Era, Edge and Christian, probably one of the pioneers in ladder matches and in tag team wrestling, but also did pretty well for himself singly as well. Famously, he was told he would never wrestle again, and with hard work, dedication, and grit factor, he was actually able to return at a Royal Rumble, shocking the world, and he's been back since. Breaking the barrier, and, you know, as an old saying, never say never. So I can relate. So that's what's going on here. Now, because I'm not exactly sure when this will take place, so a lot of people want to know about this White Rabbit thing. Now, twice so far during this broadcast, they've had computer images of a rabbit that jumps down a purple X. And the last one, the rabbit went down in the hole with the purple X and fire came out of the middle of it. Now, that being said, that's a computer image. That was a quick blotch that no one apparently noticed and no one called mind to it. So it was kind of stupid in my opinion. But anywho, needless to say, needless to say, as far as if the White Rabbit was to show up during this show tonight, the White Rabbit, in my opinion, would probably show up during the Edge and Finn Balor match, if I'm going to be a betting man. And I would say it would be, whatever the case may be, would be how it would result in someone losing. There you go. I can write this stuff all day. So, yeah, I would say if, in fact, I'm not saying he is, but if, in fact, this White Rabbit character was going to show up, it would be during the Edge. It would definitely be during the Edge and Finn Balor match. Now, a couple things I want to point out to you guys. This is not a quit match, I want to remind you tonight. And depending on where they want to go to it, but I want to remind you guys when Bray Wyatt the Fiend showed up and who his first match was against as the Fiend character. That would be Finn Balor, who was in white. Finn Balor now is part of a group called the Judgment Day, which is a faction, with himself, Damian Priest, Rhea Ripley, and Dominic Mysterio, son of Rey Mysterio. Bravo. Give him something. Anyway, I actually like a lot of the guys in that group. Do I buy Finn Balor as a leader of the group? I do not. I think there's going to be something to be said there. Yeah. So if I was going to make a prediction about this white rabbit thing, I don't get involved with, conspiracies or guesses or whatever, but my wrestling instinct tells me if there's going to be some debut of someone for the White Rabbit, it would probably be during the Edge and Finn Balor match at the main event, which I would believe would be the main event, the I Quit match, which would be the unveiling of the White Rabbit. And I do want to remind you guys that that Finn Balor, the first person the Fiend put down, so to speak, was in fact Finn Balor, the first person the Fiend had a match with was Finn Balor. And from there, the Fiend would go on to face a lot of other people who none of which had seen the Fiend. Wyatt. So, I have to say, keep an eye out on the Edge and Finn Balor match tonight if there's going to be a White Rabbit, if you think, in fact, that it's the Fiend. However, that being said, if it is not Bray Wyatt the Fiend, if it's someone completely different, then that doesn't matter really when you go, when you would put it out there, because it could be anybody. And what's to say it's a man at all? What if it's a woman? What if it's, say, Sasha Banks? She hasn't been seen in a while. What if it's Charlotte Flair, another person that has been seen in a while? I know this has been a thing that people have been throwing out names of who this white rabbit could be. Adam Rose had a white rabbit in his little group, right? That dancing guy there. Malachi Black from AEW, who was Aleister Black in WWE, who has asked for his release from AEW. And I think I heard he wasn't involved. So Bailey, the women wrestler who's a heel, apparently her knee brace to hit the other girl, Bianca Belair. By doing so, she weakened her knee brace and probably just lost the match because she did so. This is stupid. And this is where, now another thing to be said, so Bailey's friends, who she's in the group with, the whatever they call themselves, that's Dakota Kai and Io Shirai, they're part of Bailey's faction. This is going to bring out Bianca's friends, Alexa Bliss and Asuka. Now here's the thing with that, if that's the case, the issue with that would be the fact that the Fiend also has a bone to pick with Alexa Bliss as well. So Bianca's going to try to take both of these women and do her finisher, and that's going to be a mistake because she's not going to – right. This is not going to end well. This is going to be a botch. I was right. They try to make it look impressive. She had two women who were in the corner of the ring, and she tried to do what looked like to be an F5 or GTS type of maneuver, to which she slammed the girls down together like a super RKO type thing on two women. Now, Bailey, which is the heel girl, mind you, just threw a little piece of a ladder at Bianca Belair. And now she's the only one standing in this, quote, ladder match. Her mouth is bleeding for whatever reason, Bailey. I don't know where she would have been hit in the mouth. But then again, it's a ladder match, and there are ladders. You can't really control the ladders what to do. You are human. There's a ladder. There's a reason there. There's a reason why they used to say that the steel was unforgiving, because steel doesn't have emotions. Now, I'm wondering if, since when Bianca was climbing the ladder, Bailey's friends came out. I'm wondering if now Bianca Belair's friends are going to come out, because now that Bailey is about to climb up the ladder to do the same. As mentioned, she's trying to put Bianca Belair, or put the ladder over Bianca Belair, is what she's trying to do, which has been done in wrestling before. Unfortunately, she's not exactly sure how to do it. Oh, this is horrendous. So Bianca had to just sit there while she had to figure this ladder thing out. Because now what's going to happen is Oscar and Alexa Bliss are going to come out now to help Bailey. Oh, never mind. Bianca Belair is just going to power lift the ladder, which was poorly done anyway. This is terrible. This is uncalled for, unnecessary. Can't you just have a regular match? And I know I'm saying stuff coming from old school ECW, but not every match has to have a gimmick. We can have a regular match. It's okay. It is wrestling after all. What's left in this card, for those people who are wondering, is a Extreme Rules match. No, sorry, is an MMA pit, a fire pit or something. Basically, it's back in the day they had what was called the Lion's Den match between Ken Shamrock and I think it was Ken Shamrock and I want to say Steve Blackman maybe, and they. Yeah, I don't remember who it was with now. Owen Hart, maybe. I don't know. Bulldog. Two guys. Anyway, they were basically, it was a kind of a mock version of the UFC octagon. And basically, go inside this cage, which is, by the way, hanging above the ring. And that would probably be the next match, if I'm going to guess. Would be that next. It would be the cage match with Riddle and... Yeah, the Riddle and the other individuals. So Bianca Belair, who has very long hair, just whipped Bailey with her hair as a weapon. Now is setting up a ladder. I don't get that per se. Well, she's going to go for a finisher again. But Bailey this time has a ladder she's hanging on to, which is in the corner. So Bailey has a ladder she's holding as Bianca is holding Bailey barely and about to drop all of it. That was stupid. All of that was dumb. None of that made any sense. So I guess Bailey was trying to hold the ladder for leverage, but instead of letting go of the ladder to make Bianca look tough, they had her overslam her down on top of the ladder that Bailey was holding. That she could have just let go of. That was horrible. But anyway, Bianca Belair wins. Surprise. Wow. Anyway, folks, that was a ladder match for the Women's Raw Championship. And again, I believe the cage match will be next, which is, again, is like an MMA kind of a thing, where they're just going to have Seth Rollins, who is not trained in MMA. I guess he has some other things he may be trained in. But he's going to face Matt Riddle, who is trained in MMA. Did fight in the UFC. So that's the thing. And they have a special referee. Of course, it's Daniel Cormier, UFC Hall of Famer, Daniel Cormier, as the special guest referee. Which just means someone's going to get screwed in the end. It's just stupid. Anyway, that's what's going on in wrestling. Oh, this has been quite a show, huh? So Bianca Belair is sitting on top of the ladder, still gloating about her win. Which, yeah, she won. That was a dumb spot. How she won? I don't agree with that at all. Unnecessary. She could have done the same move and had the same results and not used the ladder. That was kind of a waste of time, in my opinion. But it also calls the question the logic behind it as well. So I predict next match will be the cage match between Riddle and Rollins which is like a lion's den match, again, which is like a cage octagon type thing, all the small ring. It will not be in, well, they have a cage above the ring. Well, now that I think about it, they have a cage above the ring, but last time they had one of these particular matches, they actually had it off screen. So I'm not entirely sure if, in fact, that is a thing or not. Anyway, while they're doing a commercial break, I should probably also do some shout-outs real quick. I want to also remind you guys, on Monday, just in a couple of days, on Monday, I don't call it the other holiday that it is, but on Monday, this coming Monday, I will be I am very happy to say that on Monday, this coming Monday coming up, I'm going to be joined by the current reigning Dream Masters United States Tag Team Champions right here on this podcast. That, of course, is JoJo the Bodybuilder and his tag team partner on our show. And in real life, his fellow trainer and mentor, the legendary natural Philip Ricardo Jr., and, of course, they're going to be joining me for our watch-along event as we're going to be going to YouTube right from here and watching a selection of films together, a selection of matches together and talking about them here on this air. So I urge you guys to join us. It's always a good time. It's going to be 6 p.m. on Monday, this coming Monday the 10th. I'll be joined by the current reigning Dream Masters, United States Tag Team Champions from our YouTube show. But these are the real-life people who have inspired them. The actual return of JoJo the Bodybuilder, who's been on the show before, as well as the return of the natural bodybuilding champion himself, Philip Ricardo Jr. And we're going to have them on the show on Monday. We're going to chat about these matches while we're watching them and catch up with them and see what it's like to watch them live on the air and from different locations. So these are always popular. It's always fun. And maybe during the holidays, we'll be doing them again. I think we might do, if it's a holiday, we might try to get like a massive like group thing, have a bunch of people call in, maybe former guests to call in, maybe closer to the holiday season, we might be able to do that. So should be interesting. So should be fun. I also wanted to mention real quick before I get to, and I'm doing a bunch of shout-outs in a second. I just want to start by shouting out some friends of the show that we've actually seen at in Hunt Valley. Our friends over at friends over at Brutalities. There are T friends over there. We saw them at Monster Mania. They were nice enough. I got some great new tea. I got a tiramisu tea. Yes, I kid you not. It's a tiramisu tea. It smells amazing. It tastes amazing. Very exciting. But so I'm gonna have. So I got some tiramisu tea as well as my favorite one is Sasagogo, which is another one they have. That'd be one of my favorite flavors. Unfortunately, they were just sold out of the birthday cake one they made. And again, these are all homegrown teas, all organically made. I don't know how they do it. In all honesty, one of these days we're going to get them on here. And we are planning, after talking to them, they are planning on coming on here. They're just trying to figure out when and where. And also, I got to say, you know, on Saturday morning, I was down and helping out at the different ticket venues and keeping order down there. And the gentleman who works over at Brutalities came over and brought me over some tea from the, because I'm like, oh, what did she have? Because she brings samples with them at places. What an amazing, it was an amazing, you know, flavor. It was, I think it was apple cinnamon or something. It was delightful, whatever it was. Again, they're amazing Brutalities, and you know you're going to get. I'm looking forward to seeing them in October and November, and they said they're going to hold me some of the birthday cake one. So can't wait to get that one. I'll let you guys know how that is on air because that's what I drink. And yes, I am drinking tea right now as I'm speaking with you guys. This is, in fact, the Tiramisu tea right now, and it is really good. I can honestly tell you that. It's just got a flavor to it. It's like not like it's not a fake flavor. These are actual natural items that you use to make the cocoa beans and various other things. Even a little dose of coffee into it. It's amazing. What a blend. It's just amazing flavor. Highly recommend the Brutality. It's really good. Also, in November, we also know that our friends at Dead Sled, who we've had on the show, are going to be there, as we learned on this show. So we'll have to see them as well so we can get our coffee and our key fixes. And I look forward to seeing both of those guys there. Yeah, should be a lot of fun. So apparently we're not going to have the Finn Balor and Edge thing for the main event. They're actually going to go with the main event being Riddle and Rollins in this cage. I'm not so certain I like that idea. But you know what? They must be trying to rush the White Rabbit thing, maybe? It could very well be that the natives actually, not the native, I mean by the native, I mean the fans in the arena might be so, like, buzzing right now that they might be like, we better pull this trigger on this right now. We better not wait. This is an I Quit match, I should remind people. It's very simple. You fight until one person says the words, I quit. Very simple. There's no ref stoppage and there's no anything else. So it's an I Quit match. Again, it would make the most sense if the White Rabbit was certain people to be in this match. And also, I should point out, if you expected him to show up here tonight, not be who you originally planned on it being. So I do think what they're doing is smart as far as keeping the fans on the edge of their seat. And they are, in fact, going to do the I Quit match now. And I have 31 minutes left of this podcast. So, well, hopefully while this is going on, I can let you guys know if anything amazing happens. I'm not only looking, not only expecting it, but again, Edge is coming out first. He's the veteran. He's been on the block many times. I also want to point out that just before SummerSlam, there was a campaign where there was like a bunch of cryptic messages here and there, and it turned out to be Edge. Well, here we are. This is the pay-per-view after SummerSlam, or two pay-per-views after SummerSlam. I call it pay-per-views, but no one's paying pay-per-views anymore, I don't think. For the most part, if you have Peacock, which my wife does, it's free. So there's that. And I get it for free anyway because of who I work for anyway. It's fun. So Edge is coming to the ring first. And, of course, after that will be Finn Balor. And I'm going to imagine that Finn Balor will come out with the rest of the Judgment Day, which is the faction, as I mentioned. Again, consisting of Rhea Ripley, Damian Priest, and Dominic Mysterio. I haven't watched in a little while, so I don't really know much as far as what they're doing with them as of late. But I can tell you, as last I saw, Damian Priest is actually a beast. I really like Damian Priest. He's a different kind of a goth kind of a style. And Rhea Ripley has that goth female tough action chick. She's like the modern-day bad girl. I think Rhea Ripley is very underrated, honestly, so it's nice to see her getting a rub here of some sort. So the lights are going out for Finn Balor.
The heck is that?
So Finn Balor, I don't know why he's wearing a silver studded goth mask, kind of like a pinhead type of mask, only it's like a demolition style mask. Huh. So this is very strange to me. This doesn't make sense to me anyway. But I guess it doesn't have to make sense to me, right? It's only going to be them who make sense to. I don't know why Balor had to come out with a cheap demolition style pinhead ripoff mask. Demolition did it better, for the record. And those were hockey masks that were studded, not a gimp mask, to say the least. So earlier tonight, they had a expert panel of Booker T, Jerry Lawler, and two other individuals. And yeah, but I honestly, when they have these supposed expert panels, I only really pay attention to what the wrestlers have to say, the other guys who have been on the business, I say. I mean, the commentators I don't mind who are working for the WWE, but when they bring these other people in, I can't stand them because they give off the vibe of an utter, just a geeky fan, a smark, as we call them in the business, who just overstay their welcome and always throw around their opinions and just do a more detrimental than anything else. So this is an I Quit match between Finn Balor and Edge. Again, the idea is someone has to say the I Quit. Edge is starting out aggressively, beating on Finn Balor, who is extremely much smaller than Edge. In my opinion, this is going way too easy right now. This is very bizarre to me because of the attitudes of the guys in the ring right now. They started this match where they're supposed to have this bitter rivalry with smiling at each other. Finn Balor apparently was some sort of, he's a leader, I guess. He took over for Edge when they kicked Edge, who originally was the leader of this faction. Now, again, the idea is they're going to have I Quit. So the referee, his job is only to hold the microphone to the wrestler's face so that they can say those words, which is usually often meant with hearing all kinds of other things on the microphone. So, yeah, hopefully they have the fingers on the button trigger for whatever. Because trust me, I've heard some things on the microphone before, especially in Philadelphia in an I Quit match. Yeah. Anywho, so as far as television goes, the return of Chucky season 2 came out. I watched the first episode. Hopefully everyone else did as well. It was interesting. You know, I only watched the first episode as of right now because that's all they've had thus far. And I got to say, you know, how I was just saying to my wife today, how incredible it is as how far the horror genre has come in television for a whole. For those people who don't know, the protagonist in Chucky is played by the name of the character is Jake. He's played by Zachary Arthur. And the other individual who also is a very talented young man Hold on 1 second. I just don't like having to butcher people's names. I feel really bad when I do that because I feel like it's – I don't mean to be disrespectful if I butcher someone's name. But he does a phenomenal job, the other young man. These guys are teenagers, these guys, 17, 18 maybe. And what a phenomenal job all of these casts are doing. Amazing around the board so far right now. I can honestly tell you that. Alex Vincent popped up for a minute in this episode. I'm not so certain he's dead. Supposedly he drove off a cliff with a bunch of Chucky dolls. But clearly some Chucky dolls lived. So, you know, otherwise there'd be no movie, right? All right. So, looking for this young man's name. So I do it the old school way. And I do talk to him here and there. He's a very nice young man. Both of these young men are actually. Bjorn Arneson plays Devin Evans is the name of the character he plays. So Zachary Arthur plays Jake Wheeler, and Bjorn Arneson plays Devin Evans, which is interesting. So they are actually a couple. They're both males, both male teenagers. And they are a couple in this show. They're kind of very romantic. And they're, you know, they're okay with it. They're kind of going back and forth with, you know, how accepted they are, much like in real life. It's not, you know, the whole thing in television, film, and as pop culture goes, is we've become a nation where it's been becoming more and more acceptable, I guess you'd say, and more accepting. Where you can just appreciate people for liking whoever they want to. I know for my wife and I, we always support our kids. As long as our kids are in a relationship where they're being respected and treated fairly and they're happy and loving, then, you know, we're all for whatever they want. You know, right now my son's not wanting anybody, and my daughter has a very nice young man that she's been seeing for a number of years, and I like to give him a hard time because that's my job as a dad. But, you know, that's kind of that. But these two young men are doing a great job just playing this, like, romantic love triangle thing. In the middle of this horror TV show of this psychotic doll, Chucky, historically speaking. And I feel like at this point, as a culture, we know who Chucky is. But what a Chucky doll is. If you don't like horror movies, you know who Chucky is. So I feel like I can't honestly say that no one knows who Chucky is. But I want to say how amazing it is that it took a doll to make it okay and acceptable to, you know, kind of bring forth this next trope into the young romantic, you know, feeling type thing, in my opinion. That's just me. Also in this show is Olivia Allen Lind. She plays Lexi. Now, if you guys remember the first season, she started out being a bully. She was a bully originally to Zachary Arthur's Jake in the old school. And she was dating his cousin, Junior Wheeler, who apparently in this season, we're just going to blame all of the events on Junior, apparently, who killed everybody. That mean Junior. Who, by the way, is Toe is an amazing young man. I got a chance to talk with him at Monsonia back in March. What a very delightful young man. I'm very happy to see that he's done well and he's doing good things anyway. For those guys who don't know what happened to him, go back and watch season one. You'll find out. But he's not returning as of yet. But Jim Fattili is credited with. We hear about her. We don't see her in this episode, the first episode back. See the effects of what transpired in the last season, how this has impacted everyone's life. And then let's face it, something like that happens in a little small town set in Hackensack, New Jersey, even though it's all filmed in Toronto, Canada. But anyway, that's okay. I can pretend to. But it is kind of cool to see just the dynamic of how, you know, they show the how these things affect. Lexi turns to drugs. Jake and the other young man, Devin, still trying to have the relationship, having a romantic relationship, also still trying to just overcome everything. They've come through. Jake, his dad, and his cousin, as well as his uncle, were all killed by Chucky. So Chucky is definitely a menace to Jake. Though originally, you know, he befriended Jake, to kind of do his bidding. See, I'm not overly fond of using the mold of Chucky layers. I don't want to give any spoilers for people who don't know, but if you guys watch any of the other Chucky movies, they kind of all do blend together, all these movies and shows. And although I'm told that the famous Glenn and Glenda will be making an appearance in these somewhere in these shows, I did not see them in any of this show. So who knows, maybe later. So this is an I Quit match, folks. Uh-oh. And Edge just grabbed a hockey stick that just happened to be down a dark corridor in the middle of this wrestling arena, a hockey stick in the middle of a hockey rink. Now, they do have hockey in this arena, but the hockey stick would probably be in the locker room of the hockey thing, not sitting in a dark alleyway somewhere. Edge face on Finn Balor on top of a production glass area with monitors on it. I don't know what that's all about. That's like a makeshift gorilla outfit, which doesn't make any sense because there's nobody there. Oh, that's the panel where they usually have their little before the show thing. The extra panel, as I mentioned before. So Finn Balor wants Edge to chase them, clearly. And this is probably where they're going to stick the guys from Judgment Day here and there, which is dumb. Because if Edge didn't throw him out of the ring, they would be up here in the middle of the aisleway. They're fighting literally in the crowd. And an I Quit match, by the way, is pretty much anywhere it is can be uttered the words. So they're climbing up the arena during this match, continuing. Uh-huh. Fighting now. They're probably going to end up in the concession stands. Now, Finn is just running around aimlessly. He's not really running in the direction. So if they're going to try to convince me that supposedly that the rest of Judgment Day are on the other side of these people who have now crowded, ouch. So Finn Balor charged Edge, who picked him up and, I guess, slingshot him face first into the outing ramp. And they're kind of blocked by the fans who are blocked the rest of the tunnel. So they're not going to go through there unless and there's no security moving the fans who are right there either, which is stupid. Bad security idea there. Good thing those fans just happen to be sitting there. Okay, so they're still fighting in the aisleways. The referee is carrying the microphone because, again, the only way it ends is when Edge is going to go for a spear, almost gets thrown down the stairs, but instead gets thrown pelvis first into the banister. Yeah, I'm telling you, folks. This is quite something. But anyway, Chucky, folks, season 2 just started. And Walking Dead, to my knowledge, is coming to an end, too. Once I can actually bring you guys more reports on that, I will. I have not watched the newest episode, but I will. And I will let you know what I think of that, as well as we're getting down to the nitty-gritty of The Walking Dead, folks. This is about just, we're about to see the end of history. People can say whatever they want about, you know, how it's, you know, been good, it's been bad, but to say it's not been an impactful part of pop culture of The Walking Dead is absolutely a revolution. It's something that is innovated and actually changed a lot of television for the better, in my opinion. It showed the power of fandom, The Walking Dead. In our family, as I mentioned before on the show, we used to have debates over what is the better show on Sunday nights. Is it, is it Sons of Anarchy or is it The Walking Dead? Me, of course, being the Walking Dead guy, and of course my family being, Sons of Anarchy. And then you can throw in the Games of Thrones people into that mix too, as they were shown on Sundays as well. Now you got three shows, but what I think is impactful is the fact at the end of The Walking Dead, it became such a important part of the pop culture, and it became such a movement. They needed to have a follow-up show after the show to put an end to. They needed to have a follow-up show after The Walking Dead to have fans have a place to discuss the prior episode. That, to me, I think that was the first show to have that, and I think other shows adopted that after the fact that they did the same thing. They saw, well, they're talking about it afterwards because it's so popular. I think Sons of Anarchy tried that, and I also believe, if I'm correct, Games of Thrones had a show like that afterwards. I don't know what they called them. Again, I didn't watch those other shows. But I can honestly tell you, with The Walking Dead, the reason they had those shows on afterwards is because, it was customary on Sundays, right after you were done hearing all the amazing, watching the episode, or if you missed it, they'd have all the cast or the person who died in the episode or whatever the case may be to talk about. And a lot of other things. Incredible. But anyway, but it was a phenomenon that would happen because you'd go on the social media, people would ruin a lot of it, and they would, you would have to stay off social media so people don't ruin the spoilers of who died or what was going on. But The Walking Dead is definitely something that's going to be going up there in history of one of those shows that has become so innovative and really engulfed the whole fandom. They had their own, convention based upon the movement. You want to talk about a show that does that, you're talking about things like the Star Trek, Star Wars. These are things that have been around the block for years. But The Walking Dead not been around as long as the Star Trek and the other ones, but almost immediately they became part of it. So that's something to be said. And it's impressive. So I do think that if you are a fan, if you've ever watched The Walking Dead, you owe it to yourself to have that closure to watch at least the final episode, in my opinion. That's my opinion, anyway. So they get the – so, by the way, I just want to give you guys a little – I'm going to give you guys an update on what's going on right now. So they've been going back and forth. Now Finn Balor is the one who is beaten on Edge. The poor referee has got the microphone in the face of Edge. Again, the only way the match can end is if he says, I quit. The Maroonic, I'm very thankful I can't hear the commentary because I can almost guess Michael Cole as being Michael Cole and Corey Graves as being Corey Graves. And I got to have to tell you, for a no holds barred or an I quit match, they've been beating each other up, but I definitely haven't seen anything too outlandish. I've seen a lot worse in I quit matches. I remember Terry Funk and Ric Flair at Clash of the Champions in an I quit match. That was the match. Terry Funk ended up uttering the words, but it was not done without a hell of a battle. And he was finally pile driven through a table. So needless to say, that was a match. And this thing is not as even as it should be. there's no clear winner or loser in this match, in my opinion. I don't think either one of them are, quote, worse. This Edge's last match, Edge does not look like he's suffered a great deal. Finn Balor's not a very large man to begin with. Edge is, you know, the size of a man, average. Ouch. Edge has just put on some type of submission hold, which I've never seen. It looks very painful, and I kind of want to see if it works in real life. He's kind of trying to touch Finn Balor's toes to his back of his head. And here comes Damian Priest, who's a member of the Judgment Day. Dominic, who's part of the Judgment Day, who came to the ring, is outside the ring, but he didn't come in yet. Dominic just pulled him out. That's a spear. So Edge just speared Finn Balor, who's on the apron, who went through Dominic and Damian Priest, who just happened to show up, just so you know. Yep, that's what happened there. And again, it's Dolph's guard. Anything can go. So this is not something that is outlandish or anything like that. Match is still going. Again, if this supposed white rabbit thing was going to happen, it would probably be during this match. And I say that again because, okay, so now everyone's, okay, so how Finn's got in the ring now, but he is. Rhea Ripley. So now Rhea Ripley, who's the other member of Judgment Day, who just snuck up, just handcuffed Edge to the court, to the ring rope. So Rhea Ripley just handcuffed Edge to the top rope after he just beat the tar out of everybody else. Okay, so now everyone else can beat him up. Edge is now handcuffed to the ropes with Judgment Day, Dominic Mysterio, the son of Rey Mysterio, who's, by the way, 6 times bigger than his dad is, and Dominic and Day, and now, so now, if the White Rabbit supposedly was going to happen, I suppose it would be right now that you would see the, quote, White Rabbit, because now it's a 4-on-1. I don't know why I don't believe that Rey Mysterio is not involved here anywhere. I didn't hear that Rey Mysterio is dead somewhere. Rey, of course, again, the father of Dominic Mysterio, he has a, quote, friendship with Edge. Edge and Finn Balor now has a kendo stick, and he's whipping Edge, who's, again, handcuffed to the rope. Again, it's an I Quit match, folks. This is just going to irritate Edge. So this is stupid. This caning thing is the thing they did in Ring of Honor. I'm sorry, in ECW. And well, here comes Rey Mysterio with a chair. I don't know who he just hit. I think he hit Damian Priest. But Rey's now in the ring. He's taken out Judgment Day, I guess. The other guys. He has hit Damian Priest with a reverse thing. And then Dominic, the son of Rey Mysterio, just whacked Rey Mysterio. I'm not going to lie. I think that's kind of funny. Because Dominic's like 7 times bigger than his dad. And it is amusing. Because I got to tell you, I know that Rey's been around the business a long time. And he's also a former ECW guy, too, for those, for the record. But I'm sorry. The small guy thing has been done to way too much. And he's lost that, you know, the underdog thing a long time ago. So Dominic's beating up his dad. Edge's handcuffed to the ring rope still, as Finn Balor has the kendo stick in the ring. I don't know what that was. I guess he hit him in the butt with the kendo stick. Oh, no, he's hitting him in the back of the thighs to bring him down, I suppose, because Edge is still considerably much bigger than Finn Balor. Oh, it's, okay, Beth Phoenix, Edge's wife, Beth Phoenix, is now in the ring, and she's whipping everybody with the kendo stick that Finn used. Yeah, I know. And there's Rhea Ripley, right? So now Rhea Ripley's in the ring, because, again, women. Beth Phoenix, ladies and gentlemen, just beat up three grown men, Beth Phoenix. And now she's in the ring with another woman after beating up three dudes. Beth Phoenix, the wife of Edge, is fighting with Rhea Ripley in a very bad hockey fight in the middle of the ring. She just speared Rhea Ripley in the middle of the ring. I have a minute left of this show, folks. I guess I'm going to have to give you a recap later at some point. I'll let you know how this show ends, I guess, on another edition. So, folks, hey, make sure you guys join me on Monday for our watch-along event. A big shout-out, again, to all of our friends at the F4L headquarters and all of our friends of Icons of the F4L, from the Spritzel Fight Club, the Menya Boys, JoJo the Bodybuilder, JoJo the Model Sebastian, and everyone in between. Hope you guys are all doing well. Keep up the great work. Phil Ricardo Jr. and JoJo the Bodybuilder will be joining me on Monday. Everyone else, may all your dreams come true. Peace, everyone.